Sudan's president was the subject of a hearing today at the International Criminal Court. Prosecutors there want to charge the Sudanese leader with genocide in the country's western province, Darfur. This conflict began in 2003. That's when rebels took up arms against the government. They said that Darfur had been marginalized for decades. But now people in the north of Sudan are saying that officials in Khartoum have neglected them as well. Heba Ali traveled to some villages in northern Sudan, and she filed this report.
Ramadan Idris takes a long donkey ride to the edge of the Nile. He fills two jerry cans with brown, muddy water and empties them into a tank. He does this over and over until the tank is full. Then he rides his donkey back to the village and makes a delivery. This is how people in this village get their drinking water. It's a lot of work, Idris says, but this is our reality. What can we do? El Teiti is a quiet village of about 3,000 people at the edge of the Nubian Desert in northern Sudan. In the late afternoon, old women sit in the shade of their mud homes, drinking tea and fanning themselves in the scorching heat.
We want electricity. We want water. Anything. The people of Teiti are suffering.
Most of the people here live off of remittances from relatives who go abroad to help their families survive. The village does have a clinic and an elementary school, but the villagers built them without the government's help. There's no doubt the north is marginalized, this community leader says. I have traveled to most parts of the country. These people in the north don't seem to have benefited much from Sudan's billions of dollars in oil revenue. The country's capital has boomed in recent years with paved roads, universities, and hospitals. Progress is much slower for people on the country's edges. But Khartoum maintains the government is not neglecting them. Ahmed Badawi is an economist who advises the government. He says it's not a question of Khartoum hoarding Sudan's wealth. He says Sudan was long starved for resources, something he blames on Western economic sanctions.
It's commonly assumed that money has been hogged in the center. Khartoum itself was on the ground. Petrol queues, extreme shortages of basic goods, hyperinflation. For the West to come back in now and spin it as deliberate neglect is beyond the pale.
The government in Khartoum says it now transfers half of its revenue to other parts of the country, the semi-autonomous southern government and individual states. Back in the north, many say they have seen some positive change in recent years. Paved roads connecting major towns, bridges, and a new dam that's expected to provide electricity by the end of the year. Still, northerners say it's not enough. Dafa'allah Abdelkarim is a village leader in Al-Sahaba. He says even before Darfur rebels took up arms against the government in 2003, Khartoum paid more attention to Darfur in the West.
If it is a matter of violence because of development, we should have started the violence before them because we are in more need than them. But our values and our principles don't allow us to use violence.
The North has been peaceful, but some observers say rebellion here is a real possibility. Omar Jemi teaches at the University of Khartoum.
Darfur used to be historically one of the most peaceful places in this country. We know about the Darfurians. War has never been part of their culture. But under special situations, even very peaceful people can be turned to completely different human beings.
Sudan's government has signed separate power-sharing deals in recent years, with southern rebels in 2005 and with eastern rebels in 2006. The same year it signed an agreement with the largest Darfurian rebel group, and there have been on-and-off negotiations with the others. That's left people in the north to wonder, where's our share of the political pie? For The World, I'm Heba Ali, El Teiti Village, northern Sudan.
And you can see photos of the Sudanese village at theworld.org.